Hello, this is the Torg Eternity Delphi Council Debriefings, where the storm has a name. We are your hosts, Lehman, Jay, and Mark. And today we will be continuing our how to make your Torg Eternity game the best for you and your table. So last week we talked about the system of Torg Eternity, things to keep in mind, and this episode we will talk about the setting. And we have talked about the setting a lot. We talked about the different realities a lot and stuff, but this one's going to be specifically about the purpose of your settings and how knowing the purpose of why these settings are in your game and how you define them will be very helpful for you having a successful game. So as an example, we give, as in Ulysses, in our writing, kind of an overview of all the different realities. So Isle is fantasy, and sometimes we'll combine two, like cyberpapacy is cyberpunk plus the Inquisition, and mash those two together, or Dial Empire, Indiana Jones, and the Mummy, and things like that. So each of those genres, we can point to a few media sources, whether that's comics or TVs or books or movie, but we can point to those and how that can help you define your system, especially when there's can be questions or different interpretations of what that genre is. I'll do one example and then we'll get into it. So we'll start with Isle. Isle is fantasy. And when you think fantasy, you can think everything from Dungeons and Dragons. You can think about lots of sword and sorcery type thing, like old Conan movies from the 80s, Game of Thrones and certain things. But each of those is going to give kind of a different visual. So being able to define that a little bit more for your group will be beneficial, because even if you say, hey, D&D, depending on who you're talking to, what D&D that person might know, if somebody was brought up on BX or BECME or AD&D, they're going to have a different feel than if somebody who started with 4th edition or 5th edition or 3rd edition. So depending what editions you've started off with, you might have a different idea of what it is if you just use those terms. So talking about Isle, Jay, what would be some things that you could, tips that you could give to game masters and players when they're trying to find which of that subgenre or focus, what things that they could do, what things they might be aware of if they do, and other people might be a little confused by, etc.
I think the ubiquitousness of magic, just in general, is sort of the big thing, but it's not full-blown super high fantasy. I think we discussed it just like a couple of episodes ago, something about like your average Isle household will probably have some magic item, and it might be just like a spoon that reheats your porridge or something, but or a cleaning broom or something. But so every home would probably have like a magic item, but not everything in magic items. It's not Eberron, right, where there's like magic trains going between cities and magic cranes levitating everything all over. It's still done by individual people. The other thing to remember is that cantrips can be done by pretty much anyone in Isle. So a lot of people have access to that too. They're not super big effects, but it's a nice little flavor thing to remember. And as a player, something to think about if you have any kind of magic skills as well. But as far as the setting goes, yeah, like just saying D&D is kind of the easy cop-out that the GMs usually do, right? Like, it's like, yeah, yeah, this is the D&D realm. But as you said, that can mean anything. Is it Ravenloft? Is it Spelljammer? No, yeah. So just saying that it's kind of like a classic high fantasy D&D, you know, sort of maybe like Dragonlance style kind of thing, maybe makes it fit a bit more. But also remember there's the law of legends, and there's sort of a more mythological approach to it as well. I like to include a lot more sort of almost fairy tale not quite fairy tale, but like, you know, just like legends in it too. So things will often kind of take like strange storybook tangents and things like that. And finally, the big thing to remember in the setting is the light and the dark. And to me, it's always, I always think of Excalibur when I think about the light and the dark. At the end, when King Arthur is finally roused and, you know, they head out, and the flowers start blooming again with the light. Like, that's the kind of thing that you should see in Isle, like, you know, the land. Although it's not like classic Torg where it was, like, trapped in the land. It still exists in Torg Eternity. And I'd like to reinforce that as well. So there's a lot of sort of visual motifs you can use to give a good flavor for Isle beyond its like D&D.
Right. And that was a good point. Classic Torg had the patchwork realm, quote unquote patchwork, where the various zones within Isle were either light or dark, and you could flip those. And that's something that I've used in Torg Eternity as a holdover. So it's not that difficult to do. Like if heroes do a glory event, you know, they play the glory card, then I'll flip that zone. But then if the villains happen to roll a 60, then I'll flip it the other way.
Yeah, I've kind of done something similar to that, where it's not, because in classic Torg, it was done to hide the darkness of people. So like normally, you know, in Isle, like someone who has darkness would appear like evil and haggard and ugly. And anyone who was of the light was beautiful and radiant, but then the realm had been changed, so that would go into the realm itself and people would just look normal. Mm-hmm. So you couldn't tell by looking at them. Whereas that doesn't exist in Torg Eternity, but I still like the idea of tying it into glories or just like events or just like whoever is controlling the area, just in general. If there's a bunch of dragons controlling the whole area, it's thunderstorms all the time. It's, you know, it's very tumultuous. I like having the realm fit, like, because the magic just sort of has sort of a sympathetic connection to whatever's going on in the realm.
Mm-hmm. Mark, what would some of the thoughts for Isle that you have to kind of define it a little more than just it's the fantasy realm?
So I want to step a level higher for a second, because I think one of the key things to do as we go through all of these, we're going to break them all down. I think one of the key things to remember in the back of your head is you're trying to get your players in the mood of the cosm, and each cosm should feel unique to every other cosm. And that's kind of why Torg Eternity is fun, is that when you go to this cosm, it's completely different, but you don't have to change your character to go to another cosm, which is different from where you just came. You use the same sheet, same stats. You're not reworking anything. You walk into this and you go from Isle, High Magic, into Nile Empire, Pulp Heroes, and you're still carrying the same page of statistics for your that define your character from one to the other, and you've walked out of and you've gone from night and day, different genres, and that's what makes Torg Eternity a lot of fun, right? And so as the GM, it's our job to communicate that difference to our players, and you can do that, just keep in mind, or as we go through this, try and think about the five senses, right? Touch, taste, hearing. Was it touch, taste, sight, hearing, and smell? And then use those five senses as, well, what does Core Earth's smell like? What is Isle? Does Isle smell different from Core Earth? I don't know. In your cosm, that's the beauty of Torg Eternity. Your cosmverse gets to be different, can be, doesn't have to be, but can be different from everybody else's. And so if you think, because, you know, when you walk into, as Liam and Jay said, original Torg, the light and the dark was geographically different, and it exuded out of the land and the things around it. And you could, through your deeds, you could change that. You could affect it, a lot like glory fills a zone with hope, which you can do. I haven't done that. It's a if I did a lot of stuff in Isle, I probably would kind of try and figure out how to do that, because it's really cool, you know, tracking all of the things that you do. And in this zone is good and bad, because you can absolutely treat the light and the dark like glory and like hope. And when you do good deeds in one area, it staves off things, because I still do this. I like the idea that the light and the dark are real things for Isle.
Mm-hmm.
It's not really a gray area. It's kind of black and white. You can be on the fence for light and dark, but you're going to make a decision eventually, and everybody's going to fall into one camp or the other. You can change and you move back and forth, but in my experience, almost always everybody's been in one camp or another. Neutral really hasn't been some of the Fae kind of hold that.
The outsider.
The outsider. So you've got that, but that's like a third faction that doesn't really, you got the light and the dark and then the outsider. And that, I'll be frank with you, the outsider doesn't get a lot of play in Torg, because especially in the Isle, light and dark, it's kind of black and white. So you can play off of that by deciding this area that I'm going to have my Storm Knights in is dominated by light or it's dominated by dark. And okay, well, what does that mean? If a smart Eilish Ord would have an internal sense of I am in a light area or a dark area, or, oh, I just strayed out of my whatever I'm supposed to be in and I'm in something else, maybe on purpose or maybe not. But that's kind of like a sixth sense that I would think that they would grow up with, because if you're a part of the light and you end up in an area that's dominated by the darkness, bad things are going to happen to you. You don't want to be there. So you kind of grow into that. And a smart Storm Knight would know what to, or can know what to look for, or can look for things that can give you hints. Sometimes it's blatantly obvious, right? You go into downtown London, you're probably going to catch a lot more of it versus, say, if you hit some of the spots in Ireland where darkness is holding fast, or in Scandinavia where it's a little, eh. For me, I think the Isle to me has always been more of an Arthurian Isle versus D&D. We did talk about magic mm-hmm. last time, and I like to think the idea that for Eilish people, they think about magic the same way that we think about technology. As an Eilish Ord, you may or may not have access to the best tech or the best magic, right? But you have access to some, maybe. Or if not, you wish you did. And, you know, you use the magic like we use technology, some things, like we're using technology to do all of this, right? Well, someone of a high station might do something like this or something, you know, even better, from one wizard tower to another wizard tower using magic. The Ords see that and go, oh, that's just magic. And they see the magic and they just think, oh, that's magic, or that's really cool magic, or that's really bad magic, or that's really good magic. But they don't sweat the fact that it's magic. That's just, you know, we drive down the street, we see a billboard that suddenly flashes three or four different ads to us while we're at a stop sign. We go, that's a technological marvel that, you know, in the last 10 years has come out and become ubiquitous versus the printed billboard.
Mm-hmm.
You know, our phones, if you look at what has happened to phones over the course of the last 20 years, that's, you know, but we look at it and go, okay, that's tech. And sometimes we make judgment calls based on the people around us, based on the level of technology that they have in their possession, how well they know how to use it. Because some, you know, everybody has that person in their family that doesn't know crap about their computer. And the people who do are tech support for the other people, right? Well, translate that into Isle. I know magic is a thing, and I would make that broom sweep the floor for me if I could just remember how to say Mixleplex, but I can't. I always screw it up, and then it's beating me up, and so I leave the broom alone because I suck at that. Right, because magic that same kind of idea. Magic is there. Magic is not a. It's just there for everybody, like technology is for us. So I don't. I like the Arthurian idea with, if you use Excalibur, the movie, as the touchstone, which Jay was referencing, mm-hmm. and O Fortuna is the song that plays mm-hmm. in the background, because that's one of my favorite movies.
Carmina
Burana. Yep. Carmina Burana, O Fortuna. Merlin's the only one that has magic. They know, or Morgana Le Fay, but they know it's there, right? They know it. They all know, but it's becoming a thing of legend for them. But they recognize it and know that it's there, and they accept that it can do things. They don't know how it works, but they know who has it, right? That's a departing level. Isle's not departing. Isle's full in. We're at the height, the roaring 20s of magic. We can make it do what we want it to do. Everybody has access to it. You know, if you can pay for it, you can get somebody to do what you want magically, this, that, and the other. And so it's a commodity. It's a thing. It's there. But at the same time, you've got the light and the dark. And so you've got good and bad, and people are fine with the black and white of that light and dark that just overlays everything. So to me, Isle's about those three things, really. It's the battle between light and dark. Well, two things. It's battle between light and dark. And then it's magic is pretty much kind of like technology. It's everywhere, and everybody why do you think it's weird? It's magic. It's just, what's wrong with him? So that to me is Isle.
Yeah, and a couple other things that I wanted to also bring into the conversation about Isle is kind of similar to what Jay was saying with the Law of Legends and stuff. There's like the hero thing, which kind of explains why people ask adventurers, you know, the Storm Knights to do things for them, because they have that, hey, you know, they're thinking, hey, adventurer, they do fetch quests. Hey, and the Storm Knights are like, hey, I'm a Storm Knight, not an adventurer. Close enough, you know, that type of stuff. So there are things that you might get with games and other role-playing games and video games and such that you can do if you wish to. If you want to go the Game of Thrones way, I would highly suggest looking at getting a copy, either a digital copy from like DriveThruRPG, or find something on eBay for the original Isle source book. They go into houses a little more detail. There are some.
Some are very different.
Yes.
very different.
So you would want to look at your Isle source book, but from Tor Eternity, but the original had some more houses and stuff if you want to do it as kind of a Games of Throne type thing, which I know a lot of people wanted.
I highly missed the political side of Isle. Missed that a lot.
And a lot of people were, again, if you have expectations of I'm going to be an Isle and we're going to do Games of Throne, and your game isn't Game of Thrones, you could disappoint some people. So if you're going to go that way, let your players know that. If you're not going to go that way, let your players know that, so that they know what to expect, and then your game can be successful, because there's not a disjoint or a disconnection, if you would, between what people's expectations are and what the actual gameplay is going to be. So let's go ahead and move on to Cyber Papacy. In the past, we've talked a lot about how the toaster listens to you. It's going to report all your you know, exclamations of bad-mouthing the Cyber Pope or the Cyber Church, etc. As I said at the beginning, the easy way to say it is this is cyberpunk cybernetics crossed with the Inquisition, but there's a little bit more in depth to get into it. So let's go to Jay on your thoughts on the Cyber Papacy as a setting and a purpose. Like, why are you here? And even like things that might be different than expectations, or might, depending on who you're playing with, be different.
I find one thing that's useful in a lot of realms, but especially with the Cyber Papacy and Tharkold, are to ask yourself, what is life like for the, like, what is daily life like for the regular person? So what does an Ord do during their day? Like, they wake up early, they have to pray, right? Because they're being watched. There's going to be a holy vid that they have to watch of the Cyber Pope or their local, you know, priest or bishop or whatever. They then go to work doing manual labor, which could easily be done by machines at this tech level. They probably only get a lunch break where they have to also pray or listen to a sermon while they eat. They finish working late at night. They come back home and they watch another video on the Holy Vid. If they're lucky, they have access to the Godnet at home. Otherwise, they have to go to a church. They can kneel down in a pew and access the Godnet and get the benedictions from a priest. And when they enter the Godnet, it's not work. It's paradise. They're getting endorphins, like, jamming into them. They're, you know, so everything that they're toiling all day is worth it for when they visit the Godnet in reality, and it's better than reality, and they can see the mountain and their promised reward and everything. So know that that is what most people are doing almost unthinkingly, and they want better access. They want to be able to have a cyber deck in their own homes. Mm-hmm. They want to get higher piety points so they can fly in the Godnet or, you know, what have you. There's no money really in the Cyber Papacy. You just get what you need, but what you need is not usually what you want. And if you want, that's avarice and it's bad. So not everyone fits into this. And that's where you get, like, the underground with all the cyberleggers and gangs and everything. And they do still have an economy going on there. So it's very important, I think, if you're a player, to know these things. Because if your GM just tells you, hey, this is like cyberpunk with, like, the Inquisition, it's true and it's a good start. But it doesn't really give you the full picture of what's going on. And this is probably something that will also... that actually happens in Isle and in Pan Pacifica of, like, why is this so bad? Right. I was actually going to mention in Isle too. I forgot originally, but one of the big things there is the hierarchy. Like, there's like peasants, right? There, they are like peasants and they have no upward trajectory. They work for their lords and wizards and everything. And everyone in Isle just thinks it's normal. And so that's something that GMs can also show, that, hey, yeah, even the light still treat their peasants like peasants, right? So it's just ingrained, and it's something to remind you, it's not necessarily good going there. And sure, the Cyber Papacy will give you free cyber limbs and feed you and clothe you, but you will lose a lot of freedom. So it's good to know why people are fighting against it. And then, as far as, so as a player, this is a good thing to know. And then also, it's kind of good to know there's different factions, and this is for every reality as well, but, like, kind of you want a little bit of background on cyber gangs. Who are they? What are the Sprawls, you know, versus the villagers that are out in villages outside of the Sprawls, and how it's very different, because sometimes players don't necessarily know all of this kind of information if you just sort of gloss over it. As a GM, it's also a big question of how much do you tell people? Because in all of these realities, there's so much that you could tell people, but then their eyes will start to glaze over. So sometimes it can also be good to deal it out piecemeal throughout the game. So if you have a Cyber Papacy character in your game, and you're the GM, and you talk to the person, and they don't really, it's their first time playing Torg, what do you tell them? Well, first, are they from Magna Veritae, or are they transformed? Because that drastically changes how much you need to tell them. Right. Sort of like how every Ororsh character that I've ever GM'd has been, well, all but one have been from Victorians from Ororsh, like from Gaia. So it's like, okay, you need to know some stuff. So you have to explain a lot of things, the importance of piety points, and basically how things worked back there versus here, and how you even got here, since so many people are kind of like rebelling against him. Whereas if you were just transformed here, you kind of have no idea, and you can let them go just off as it is. And then you can introduce the other factions, like the Cyber Witches, the White Witches, all kinds of stuff. But with the Cyber Papacy, the big things are make sure the Godnet is ubiquitous. It's everywhere. It doesn't even have to be the toaster is listening, but the fact that people can just say Godnet and ask it a question, like as a prayer, anyone can like Google anything at any time just by saying a prayer. It's always listening, right? Mm-hmm. There's Cygoyles up on the battlements looking down on us at all times. The other thing I like to reinforce is how nice things look, but how fake it is.
Right.
There will always be at least one hollow imager that's on the fritz. So you can see the concrete brutalist building that's underneath the glorious hologram that the players see. So I think as a GM, showing that the Cyber Papacy is kind of a sham is one of the biggest things to do. And to show how so many of the flock are just following it without question. And then that's the real thing that the Storm Knights have to deal with, not just fighting church police.
Mm-hmm. So, Mark, what would some thoughts that you have to help players and game masters navigate the Cyber Papacy as the setting?
So I 100% agree with Jay on the know the ords in the Cosm. I actually took that note down on something to point out if it didn't get brought up as well. I would say that if you really want to put a little time into all of your Cosms to have a good flavor of what your Cosm burst looks like, is to go through that exercise to say, okay, I'm in Isle. What does an Isle ord do? I'm in Cyber Papacy. What does Cyber Papacy ord do? And go through the idea of ords that are from Magna Verita or, you know, Isle, the home Cosm, and have come to the realm here to do their thing versus an ord that's a core earther who transformed to that Cosm, which they're going to be different because the core earther, how much of the core earther's previous life do they still have? And how does that surface when it comes in conflict with what their current Cosm is? So knowing that gives you a flavor so you can flavor the two. So they because they're going to be, in that case, it's going to be kind of subtle, but there's definite differences that'll also help your players with, if they're going to play one versus the other, you can give your players, well, this is kind of how you approach, you know, in Cyber Papacy, this is how you approach faith. You know, a cyber papal ord who came over as a priest or some other individual with, you know, the Cyber Pope and everybody else, it is not going to see the piety score as anything other than this is how it is. And the faith is the faith. There's no other faith. What do you mean other faith? Oh, I'm losing piety score. I'm losing piety points just talking to you. Go away. You know, they're going to react differently versus that other ord that's got that in the back of their head where they remember, you know, this pantheistic world that we live in where we have a whole bunch of people that believe a whole bunch of stuff. And for the most part, most of us are okay with that, right? We're like, okay, I have my faith, you have your faith, and I'll listen to you, you listen to me, and then, you know, we can exchange ideas, but we go on about our way. That's not how the church is in Cyber Papacy. And an ord who has transformed from core earth is going to react a little differently, going, oh, yeah, I seem to recall. Maybe I'm not supposed to. And they might be a little more open to Storm Knights who come up. So and knowing how that works is a great idea. I see in the Cyber Papacy, I see the Godnet as to the Cyber Papacy as magic is to Isle. The Godnet is just everywhere. It's literally, if you read through the how Mauro invaded, the Godnet just showed up first and brought all this stuff. And that's the other thing you got to think about. The people in the Cyber Papacy Cosm really are helped to a certain degree. I mean, people who are missing legs, they're not missing legs anymore. If you were blind, you can actually see now. You know, so all of this stuff the church has done, they really are helping people. Now, there's a price for that help. And your piety score goes down if you don't pay it on a regular basis. Excuse me, something's in the air. And that routine, what's the routine? What do they do? How do they go about doing it? The surface is always, as Jay pointed out, everything's a facade. It's all shiny and clean and bright and happy and smiling and on the surface. But that's a very, very shallow surface. That's a thin, thin veneer. You can scratch that facade and get right through it easy. And they really are. They can do, their technology can do anything that magic can do. The problem is their technology is crippled by their, by the level of bureaucracy that you have to go through to get to the magical technology. And so, yes, they could, the toaster is listening, but the report that the toaster just heard might not make it to a Jack Priest who can act on it for 3 weeks because it's caught in channels. And so is your Storm Knight group exposed just because they talked in front of the blender? Or is it more like the church now knows, but nothing happens when they do it? Okay, I mean, just because the camera snapped a picture doesn't mean the church police show up right now. Could mean, it depends on, you know, as you as a GM, what do you want to have happen? Do you need the church police to show up? Okay, well, see the camera up there? Yep, then here comes the church police. Boom, boom, boom. Now we got an encounter and off we go. Or, and sometimes this is better, is the camera really working? Is it on? As Jay said, there's always a hollow emitter somewhere that isn't working. Was that camera working? Do you want to spend any time to find out? Et cetera, et cetera. So I like this. You got to think about in the cyber papacy, you do have to touch on the religion of cyber papacy and how that interacts in the world, because it is at the core of everything they do. That piety score, I have discovered that for the most part, piety score is kind of cool. It's a neat flavor of cyber papacy where you have a score that goes up and down based on whether or not you're doing the things that the ruling power of the church sees as good and doing or bad, avoiding whatever. In actual practice, that score gets used in the first scene of the first act, and everybody's like, oh, cool, we got a piety score. We got to worry about it. Let's go genuflect over here, and then let's do this thing here. And then by the third scene, you never hear of it again. You may be in the cyber papacy for 4 or 5 acts. Piety score doesn't come up again. And, you know, they talk about how it's always up here. You're walking around in the God net. Everybody can see your piety score or not. You know, how does that work? And it becomes a forgotten piece that's really flavor for the cosm, but it can get lost. And it can cause your table to bog down too, which is kind of why I think GMs kick it to the curb a little bit. I kind of like to take a page out of Paranoia, the game, and use the church kind of like the computer. A friend computer, you know, knows everything that's going on, and you can be whatever, and there's definite hierarchies and ranks. You have definite hierarchy and rank. There are castes and stations, and you aren't cleared to know this. And why are you here? You're not authorized to be in this area. You know, these kinds of things. That's very cyber, to me, that's very cyber papacy. But I would break it down for how you have your system structured. Do you have a very feudal setup? with the church overlaying it, high technology, is it very responsive? Is it not responsive? Is the bureaucracy broken? Is it work? How much levels? I mean, we can go on for a long time on stuff like that in cyber papacy. Are the Jesuits a thing? Do we want to go spoiler on Ebon Excrux that comes out in? Because we've already covered Unhallowed Data, right? We went through that.
Was that one that we went through, or was it?
Did we do Unhallowed?
No,
I don't think so. But
okay,
we've talked about it, but it's probably
we have mentioned thing. In the one we were going through High Lords that Ebon Excrux and the Cyber Pope sometimes do things on their against each other more than the other darkness devices. So
the darkness devices of
the Cyber Papacy is doing a lot behind the Cyber Pope's back.
There's more. If you're going to GM the Cyber Papacy, you might want to figure out that relationship before you go too far into it. And if you're not going to run that for a while and you just want to say, it's like everybody else, you can do that too. Just understand that there's a bunch of canon stuff out there about that relationship, that there's a lot of game fodder in that beyond what's just officially published. You can go a long way with that. And yeah. You should know.
I wanted to mention you. Well, first, you said a lot about how there's the facade and the piety score and stuff, and I wanted to emphasize the piety score in a lot of the published adventures. It's kind of like, hey, the Delphi Council gave you a spoof piety score, so then you don't worry about it, which can be, it's like. Good and bad in a way. It's good because, you know, you don't have that thing hanging over you the entire time, but then it's bad because if the Delphi Council is going to do that every single time, that whole point of the Cyber Papacy is just tossed aside. So there are instances where I would strongly advise or tell game masters to think about it. Maybe sometimes those spoofs go away. So when they've been spoofed and they have a good, you know, the Storm Knights have a good piety score, and all of a sudden there's a glitch in the system, and boom, that fake piety score goes down and their real ones ahead, then you will have the people who are saying all the wrong things and not caring. They're going to be affected more than the ones who are pretending, at least out on the street, even though my score is high. If I'm saying stuff that's bad, then people will be looking at me funny. If you're saying stuff good, then that would kind of increase that perception of the piety score above your head. So have those things fail every once in a while.
Perceptive guard.
Yeah, have a perceptive guard or... just like
at
in
least
the real
understand
world.
how you're going to deal with it. Like what? So here's a question for you. What happens? You got a group of Storm Knights. They have a spoofed piety score that, okay, this is just high enough to where you're not going to draw any attention. Not so high that people will go, ooh, look at him. Right. And then you have that moment, that glitch, whatever, that those go away. The church only knows about some of those people.
Right.
Maybe none of them. Right. Because you got those cards. And if the church knows about them, they have a piety score. It's probably real low. But what does it look like for a Storm Knight that when that spoof happens, the God doesn't know who you are? What happens now? Because the church doesn't know who you are.
Yeah, and that's something that the Game Masters can bring into the adventures. I know when I, in Torg Eternity... When we started off with new characters, the first time they entered the Cyber Papacy was at a, you know, was crossing a border, a legitimate border. It wasn't like a sneak across the border. It was we're getting processed. I had a couple of cherubs, you know, AR angels come out and took everybody's biometric data. You know, they just did, you know, little vision I-beam things came, and they got facial recognition, they got fingerprints, and they got all of that stuff. They asked some questions, and then that was uploaded into the database. And then if they were seen later, you know, doing things against their spoofed Piety score, then things would be updated. But again, as Mark had said, both because of the social not being very high, it's not living land low, but it's low enough that you don't get those instant reactions of lightning speed answers to, oh, that guy's doing something wrong, the police immediately are involved, the street beaters are immediately coming for you. Take into account that, yes, the Cyber Pope's in charge. There is that conflict between him and his darkness device, but everybody else is vying for power. All the cardinals are vying for power. All the bishops, you know, are trying to become cardinals. All, you know, they're all trying to do things. And while they might be overridden by somebody with a higher authority, they don't have to like it. And if it's someone equal, they could be like, you stay in your lane over there. You do your thing with your monastery. I'm the abbot over here in my monastery, you know, where I have control. So there might not be information passed back and forth because of that. Or you might have two people in power that are friends or friendly, and they will give information back and forth. So you don't always have to present everything as always being the same. So if one time the street beaters were late arriving and gave you, you know, X many minutes or whatever before, while you're trying to break into the Godnet and steal some information and get out, that doesn't mean the next time is going to be the same. It might take longer. It might be quicker. What routes are going through? And as a game master, you can switch things up. And it, again, will make it so that every adventure in the Cyber Papacy isn't exactly the same. So, Jay, did you have any last comments about Cyber Papacy?
Regarding the Piety score, it's worth remembering that while in the Godnet, your Piety score is visible to everybody, but when you're in the flesh, it's not. Someone has to actually scan you, like check you, or have pure sight goggles to be able to actually see what your Piety score is, which is part of the suspicion, like, because you look around in the flesh and everyone, they don't know if I can trust this guy or not. Whereas if you're in the Godnet, you can plainly see, oh, I can trust this person because they have a high Piety score. And what I usually do is, if it's a quick in and out mission, you know, they'll have their spoofed Piety score, and it doesn't really matter if it dies at some point. But if it's a longer campaign set in the Cyber Papacy, they only get the one spoofed identity, and if they let it go fallow, then that's on them. And that's also something that player setbacks are made for. It's something I'll say.
So, Mark, any last thoughts on the Cyber Papacy?
Going back to the church really helped people. I like the idea of the Cyber Papacy as a whole being more like the Three Musketeers time frame of France. That, to me, is not the technology level, but that attitude where you've got lords and serfs and class warfare kind of thing going on between the crown and the cardinal versus the king's musketeers. And as Liam pointed out, that's everybody. If you're down here, you want to be up there, and the only way you get there is you have to move somebody out, because you're not very upwardly mobile like we are in society in the US and whatnot, generally speaking. The church actually helped people. And so if your Storm Knights are approaching an Ord or an individual of the Cyber Pope, their lives might have been dramatically improved with the arrival of the church, and they generally might like it because of the things that and they don't, it's not openly known that Malro is an invader by most of the people, and some of the people don't care. Like, if you were a quadriplegic when the church showed up and you got new arms and legs, would you care? How much would you care? Because you can walk again and you got hands again. So, I mean, you got to go through that as how much helpful. The resistance is everywhere, just like the toaster is listening. So are the resistance is looking for a weak moment in the church to pop in and help. But not everybody in the realm sees Malro as an invader that needs to be booted out. Some people are like, my life is better and I like it this way. Don't you mess with that. So understand who that you should, as a GM, understand if it's important to the NPCs you've laid out, what their view is before the Storm Knights approach them.
Okay, so let's go ahead and we'll move on to the last one for today, which we'll head into the Living Land, which the Living Land, you kind of think, and you tell people, what is it? You're like, oh, it is Land of the Lost, maybe Jurassic Park, Jurassic World, that type of stuff with dinosaurs. Maybe Quest for Fire if you talk about old 80s movies and stuff like that. But yes, that's kind of what the just, okay, quick little, this is the genre. Now let's dig into it a bit more on the how can you define it and make sure that your players understand how you're doing it so that there's no disconnect between expectations and what's happening in the game. So Jay, Living Land.
I think Living Land is probably the cosm that is most disserved by the quick, it's like this, mm-hmm. you know, because there's so much to it. And I ran Torg Eternity for years for my group, and we were in the Living Land a number of times. And I was recently running another game of it with the same people, and I decided I'm just going to really focus on the Living Land this time, and we're going to introduce the main character to all these things. And they're like, wow, we never even knew about this stuff. So there's an element of, in a perfect world, the players will read the information about the realm that their characters are from. But in reality, that does not always happen. You're lucky if they give you a backstory sometimes. So I think there are a few things that you have to make sure you impress upon people about the Living Land. And the first is Lanala and Kethakals, like, just in general. Like, you have to make sure they know about it's a religion, even though it's like a bloody savage religion. Mm-hmm. It's about life, right? And that everything. And they want experiences, and they are basically sacrificing these experiences to Lanala, whether they're good or bad. The experience doesn't matter. But ultimately, it's about life. It's important to explain the difference between Optins and Gotax, mm-hmm. Just to get them a base understanding, because otherwise it could be characters just blithely wandering through the jungle with a machete and occasionally getting attacked by lizard men and killing them and moving on, and it never goes beyond that. So you need to introduce some of the spirituality and explain Lanala, because that also factors into, especially if someone is playing a Living Land character, even if they're transformed humans and they're not chosen of Lanala or anything, but they would still know Lanala. Mm-hmm. Even if they are like, well, I guess players can't be Los Ezek and Agrandos, but, you know, like, if they're a New Age character or something like that instead, which is still doable in Living Land, they would still know of Lanala, because Lanala is so present in the Living Land just in general. So it's important that they know how the realm works, and also how dead things work, like, what are dead things? And the fact that there's a difference between dead things and unliving things. Mm-hmm. And it is quite possible for there to be some things like a rock that has been like a giant promontory rock on the edge of a waterfall that the sun has been on for thousands of years. It might not be a dead thing because it might have a spirit inside it that over, you know, looks over the waterfall. So it wouldn't be considered dead, but something processed and fake, like metal, beyond ore, like would be considered dead and spiritually inert, I guess is the real way you would explain it. So those things, and then the mist is the other big one. It's, as a GM, you always want to emphasize the mist existing. Because even if it's giving no mechanical penalties, unless someone plays a deep mist card, of course, it should still be present. And it's one of the key features of the Living Land, even beyond wonders and all of that stuff. And even though the Law of Wonders is a thing, you don't have to include a wonder every game, but you should have one in your back pocket in case someone plays the Law of Wonders card.
Right, right.
Right? That's the same thing, like in the Nile Empire, you should have just like some random Nile villain ready to go at any time. So as a GM, those are the things that I like to focus on for the Living Land. I think it really bumps it up from just being a wandering and killing dinosaurs, which kind of gets old pretty quick, which is part of the reason why a lot of players don't like the Living Land. Like in classic Torg, of course, there were the added aspects of constantly losing your stuff and getting lost.
Right.
But it was also just, we're going in here to kill dinosaurs. And that was pretty much it. So you always want to kind of reinforce the reasons and what makes the realm different and not just a slog killing things. And as far as for players, you want them to know what it actually means. If they are an optant, or at least if they, if they're worshiping Lenala, what, who is Lenala? What does it mean? They don't necessarily need to know about Rex Dalek or anything like that, but they should at least know Lenala.
Mark, what would be some of the thoughts to help players and game masters navigate the Living Land as more as just the, here's a few mashups of law, you know, Land of the Lost plus Quest for Fire smashed together?
I think Jurassic Park said it the best when it said life finds a way. The Living Land is verdant, luscious growth of stuff everywhere. And I think the Law of Wonders, I like the Law of, a Law of Wonders for the Living Land as possibly the most, the Living Land is the most flexible cosm there is, because if you want to have anything show up in the Living Land, you can, because you can just go Law of Wonders. Why is this here? Law of Wonders. Is it impressive? Law of Wonders. You can just, and the Law of Wonders also makes sure that nothing is ever lost, for really lost, or gone or whatever. You can encapsulate it in a wonder and have it show up somewhere, and in the Living Land. And it's just, is it out of place? Yeah, but that's what makes, from a Living Land perspective, that's what makes a wonder, is that, you know, you're in this triple canopy jungle, and all of a sudden you walk into this deep obsidian black flat wall. Where did this come from? I have no idea. You know, now we're doing 2001 A Space Odyssey, right? So, how do you want to do this? You can do it any way you want. To me, the landscape is while it's, we talk about Land of the Lost and Jurassic Park and all that, it's to me, it's a lot more post-apocalyptic than it is ancient prehistoric dinosaur, because remember, the Living Land's not native to this area, to us, to our cosm. It was brought here and sprang up wherever it was planted, and right now it's planted in population zones for the most part. You can get into some rural portions of the country where the Living Land exists, and is it jungle just like it's jungle in the Amazon in South America? It's absolutely deep jungle, you know, in between the coast of North Carolina and further west, there's deep jungle, okay, because the woods in that area, very, very rural, very just woods. I've been in them. And if that turns into the Living Lands, yeah, it's going to be deep jungle and nothing else. So can you do that? Yeah, but for the most part, where we show up is in the Living Land is where buildings were, where other civilization was. So you're going to have to, as a GM, you really need to know, what does all of this, our modern life, look like when it's reclaimed by Triple Canopy Jungle in a week? Because it's going to grow up that fast and overtake it and done. And I think you need to understand also the law of decay, and have an idea in your head how, because nobody wanted to go to the Living Land in original Torg because we had cool stuff that we got from other cosms. And if you go into the Living Land, the law of decay is going to claim one of them at least. And you didn't want to lose any of your stuff. And so when you went into the Living Land, you were super paranoid, like, oh, it's going to get my magic item, or oh, it's going to get my gun, or it's going to get, you know, whatever the cool thing that you had was, the Living Land's going to claim it. And it wasn't as forgiving as it is in Torg Eternity. I do think that Torg Eternity as a game system has done a great service to the Living Land and made it a lot more than just, as Jay said, going there to kill dinosaurs. You kind of get a little Living Land fatigue in both Classic Torg and Torg Eternity, because Living Land in both cases was the first cosm that most people ever went into, was the first cosm that was kickstarted for Torg Eternity. And so there is a plethora. It's been out the longest, and so everybody's like, yeah, we've been to the Living Land. We don't go there anymore. We've got tons and tons of material for the Living Land, and so it's kind of hard to make that into something fresh. But from the standpoint of as Jay opened his part with, you really are going to have to put a little legwork in on this cosm, because I think it's very important to, if you want to get away from the dinosaur part, get to the Adenos part, because the Adenos are as important to the feel of that cosm as anything else is. The Adenos people are the Living Land. And so how the tribe works, how the clan works, how the Red Jaw work, how the Baru Ka works with those guys, how the primitive humans work, how the survivors who are clustered around hardpoints, and the Living Land has a crap ton of hardpoints all over the place, apparently, because we always write something that's got a hardpoint there, right? I'm doing that right now in Keenansville. How do those people interact with whatever? What's that politically look like? Which is way, you know, that's way beyond the social level of the Adenos. But the Adenos have a tribal culture. So how does that nomadic tribal culture interact with people who have a much more core earth, much higher social axiom? Right. So you really need to know what a Gotak is and how they work, what an Optin is, how they work, how your Adenos work with people and interact with them, what jackets are. Those are the normal people. Dead things, living things. What is a dead thing? Because your Adenos care about that. And that's Gotak stuff. We don't mess with that. That's the Gotak stuff, as well as dead bodies. But the Gotaks tend to deal with dead things, because dead. What's a living thing? And how do primitive inhabitants perceive all of this modern stuff? The cave dwellers, cave people, whatever you want to call them, that came over the bridge, they see it one way. How does a transformed Ord, who remembers working in that big, giant, tall stone structure over there, but doesn't really, how do they remember that? That was their office building. Now they're living in a cave at the base, which at one time might have been a subway entrance that transformed or something like that. Is there a connection to that? Is there something that goes on? How do they see it? You kind of need to know that to give it life. And you can turn it from, we come here to kill dinosaurs, we brought law rockets for T-Rex because that's what you do, to here's four different Adenos tribes that don't get along. So you gotta know, to me, that's another way to do it. Get the Adenos involved. Learn about Toktakur. Learn about Rex Dalek. Bring them up. Have a Z-Rex running around. If you don't know what that is, go look that up, because that's a lot of fun, too. Law rockets ain't the best thing in the world. I mean, Just saying. But anyway, there's a lot more in the Living Land than there used to be. And I think that it, because we have kind of a Living Land fatigue, if you sit down and look at it for a while, you can get some really cool stories out of Living Land.
Yeah, and I think multiple times, and I'll say it again, look at First Walk, which I believe is in the Delphi Missions, the first Delphi Missions.
Yes.
Look at that one.
Living Land.
Or Living Land, Delphi Missions.
Yep.
That is an excellent...
Fantastic.
...introduction into, a culture of one specific Edenist group. Also, I want to say, Mark, you'll have to tell me which of your adventures, and if it's on Drive-Thru RPG... I remember going through, but I don't remember the specific name for it, where we did meet couple of Edenists.
Careful before you go into that, because okay. Jay's going through it now.
Okay. Well, what's the name of that for people to look at?
It's not on Drive-Thru yet. I'm waiting for Jay's table's got to finish going through it, and the Friday table. Jay, you're on Tuesday, right?
Yeah.
And the Friday table. When the Tuesday table and the Friday table finish going through that, that's going to go up on Drive-Thru, but that's got four unique Edenos tribes, mm-hmm. and Jay's getting ready to get into this part, so I'm not gonna.
Yep, nope.
He doesn't know this yet.
So soon, at some point, we'll
a dinosaur stomp.
I'll try to make sure, because I remember that adventure also bringing up these type of points.
It's called discussing. The Kenansville Enclave, okay. And it'll be up on Drive-Thru. I'm lazy and slack and eventually.
But that is something that you can take and you can work it into an adventure like Mark has done. There with the social level, it is a point where you can kind of talk to Edenos tribes and get them on your side, get them to break away from Baraka. Wonders are cool. But I really suggest you not only use wonders to prop up the Living Land. I really don't understand the Living Land. So every excursion into the Living Land is going to be finding a wonder, because that's easier, more exciting. Living Land can be real cool. I remember even though we've talked about all the negatives about Living Land, which are true, I'm not saying they're not true about the Living Land in Classic Torg, when one of my players decided to play in Edenos, everybody at the table was just like, oh, great, what's this dinosaur lizard guy gonna be like? And he was an optant who chose some really cool miracles, and then when he got into battle, he was just as good as anybody else. He would, he could go up to a tree, turn the tree into a spear, stab somebody with it, spikes would blossom out of it, giving wounds, and then when he yanked it out, it gives more wounds, just the brutalness of it. But it was all, as Jay said, to give Lanala experiences. So when other things were happening, he might seem very naive or other things, but he was trying to experience things, so that that was like his form of worship to his goddess, was here's different experiences that I'm going to have, and I'm going to inflict on others and have inflicted on myself to give to you. So there can be that whole dynamic of things as well. So having said that, we are kind of on the wrap up of this. So next time we'll get into some other that we hope you were able to get some good information about how you want to, as a game master and as a table, to communicate to your players so that their expectations meet what the reality at your table is. You might have that first step of, oh, here's the genre, or here's the movie or TV show, but ways to get deeper into it so that people understand the purpose of, this is the Living Land's purpose, this is the Cyberpapacy purpose, and this is Isle purpose. You can adjust things that you want, but communicating that to your player will make your game a lot better. And having so that, you can write us at torgdcd@gmail.com. We'll read the email off like we did in past episode. We'll answer questions. And if you comment, we'll comment back. But until next time, we hope you have fun in your own Cosmiverse. Bye.